Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're talking about something that's near and dear. As you know, on the Business Day Spotlight, at the end of each week, we touch on the economics of the country and of the world. And for today, we're going to be discussing the economics of a particular sector that's been, you know, quite instrumental in disseminating information during this time of COVID-19, during this time of lockdown, and that is the media industry. It's the industry that's been either entertaining people whilst they've been in lockdown, or, you know, sending across crucial information about the disease itself, or at the same time what's going on in terms of the economy, and actually telling stories and holding our leaders to account just around their response to the actual crisis. But it is an industry that has itself been impacted, and to sort of help us to unpack some of these issues, we are joined by Mary B. Papaya, who is the founder editor at the South African National Editors Forum, together with Kate Skinner, who is the executive director at the South African Editors Forum. So we're just going to be having a discussion around what's been going on, and then just hear what the future will be. I think to begin with, Kate, just starting off with you, can you just give us a little bit of flavor around what the South African National Editors Forum's role actually is for those who might not know?
Yes, thank you for that. And thank you for this opportunity to talk about SANEF and its role. So SANEF organizes editors and senior journalists, also people that operate in the training and the academic sectors as well. So we are an industry body, we organize members, and we are particularly committed to freedom of expression, freedom of information. So we do a lot of policy work, we do a lot of legal work, and we do a lot of support to our members around safety issues. We've played a very, very important role in terms of supporting our members with everything from documentation to safety issues, and now, of course, also looking at funding for journalists who've lost their jobs.
I just want to bring Mary in on this, just around the role of SANEF. As a founder editor of the forum, because I'm pretty sure that you've seen, you know, many things over the years, that SANEF has actually been in existence. Can you equate this moment that we're in to anything, that the media industry has actually had to grapple with, like COVID-19?
Certainly. Hello, and thanks so much for having us. Certainly from a position of SANEF, and if memory serves me correct, I would say this is an unprecedented moment. If we can compare it somewhat, it will pale in comparison to the kind of work that SANEF has done since the founding members signed up. At that time, the fight was around our democracy. The fight was around making sure that transformation in the media happened. And the fight then was around making sure that the legislation protected media freedom, because media freedom then and now is the lifeblood of our democracy. But coming back to COVID, no, certainly not. I think this is a time in the history of the media industry where things are both complicated, at the same time new, challenging, but I think also time for the media industry to take stock of where we are and what is the business going forward.
I think as a follow-up to you, Mary, on that point, do you... from an economics of the media industry, would you say that it's fair that the media industry, which has been, regarded as an essential service during these period of lockdowns and has been actually quite crucial in disseminating information, is it fair that the industry finds itself, in such a bad place economically, given its important role during this time?
Listen, we can unpack what led to this. certainly March 23 onwards, we can pinpoint the economic downturn and the lack of revenue and the loss in readership and audiences to COVID directly. But the decade before that, we know that it was the commercial imperatives that had already impacted negatively on the media space, and particularly the commercial impact on the newsroom. So a decade before COVID, we've been seeing it coming. We've had before COVID concern raised about the commercial imperatives that were dictating the mandate of the news across the media terrain. Both within the commercial sectors of print and broadcast, but also in the public and the community sectors of print, broadcast, and more recently, obviously, online. But when you talk what COVID has done and the impact post-COVID, certainly it calls for a different conversation altogether. We're sitting on 700 reported cases of job losses. My sense is we're probably going to run into thousands, given the fact that we're already hearing from some of the most commercially driven, commercially viable entities that they're going to continue with retrenchments and job losses and job trims and job cuts. So from that perspective, the situation is going to get worse, and it does call for a well-positioned, a well-rounded, well-documented, well-thought-out plan so that we can salvage what's left of our journalism.
I guess, Kate, your take on the matter, and in that as well, what are some of the big issues that you think have been exacerbated by the crisis?
Yeah, so I want to agree with Mary that, in fact, you know, the huge crisis started kind of long before COVID. And what has happened is that COVID has just exacerbated the problems that were already there. So if we look at the issue around retrenchments, I mean, some very interesting research was done at Fitz University, the State of the Newsroom report, and it looked at the fact that in 2008, we had approximately 10,000 journalists, and by 2018, we literally only had 5,000 journalists. And Mary is absolutely correct that just in this COVID period, the kind of lockdown period to now, 700 jobs have been lost. And that is before the retrenchments at the SABC, 600 people, supposedly, we need to look at what actually happens. And also 510 people, Media 24 has also said that they are planning to retrench. These people have not been retrenched yet, but those are the plans on the table. And also Prime Media, the media house that organizes and has the station 702, Cape Talk, those kind of stations have also talked about the fact that they are going to be retrenching workers too. So you've got all of that happening in terms of retrenchments, but also you've got a number of media entities closing. And I think one of the things to say is that we have had a lot of the print media closing. So we've seen a whole, magazine company, associated media publishers closing. And they are the ones that, published Cosmopolitan magazine. And then also Caxton, publishes a lot of magazines. They actually have sold their whole division. So we're going to see a lot less magazines. And then Associated Independent Publishers, they basically have actually closed about 80 publications across the country. And those are these little print publications, so important for small towns, so important for rural areas, they are all, they have actually closed down. So we've seen a lot of publications closing down, we've seen a lot of retrenchments, and it just means that the industry has actually shrunk. It means that there are less voices, and we've got, particular areas of the country that are so important, our provinces or small towns, that now have less media. So that, I think, is something that we need to worry about.
What type of conversations are sort of being had at that editorial level, because at the end of the day, media houses are commercial enterprises. at least in the sense of trying to be sustainable and not having to close down. So what has actually been the evolution of the conversations? Because both yourself and Mary are talking about the fact that the last decade has sort of, been, defining this shrinking, these shrinking newsrooms, and the current crisis just sort of accelerated what was already going on. So over time, what are the conversations being had about perhaps ensuring the sustainability or growth? Is it digital? Is it getting rid of printing? We hear that, printing presses are expensive. What are some of the things that are being spoken about?
So let's look at the context of the conversations. Certainly from a SANOF perspective, we have a history of talking to the media owners, the media executives, and the issues around the commercialization, and the issues around the issues of funding models, and the conversation around the commercial imperative and this versus the sanctity of the editorial and the newsroom has been happening for decades since I've been at SANEF. But post that, if we look at the current situation, what are some of the subject matters or the important economic concerns and economic indicators that we're looking at around this particular scenario that has been brought on and exacerbated by the pandemic? So if you look at what SANEF has done, so we called for this research at the very start of it all. And our research pointed to something that showed, yes, there is this dissemination of the media industry, jobs cuts, job losses are a reality. But one of the things it showed was a spike from the actual audience and the listener position. We saw that, for instance, in the print industry, online experienced a big spike in audience. And that was an area that I think most media houses have run with, taken into consideration and started looking at how they can benefit from it, how they can turn it into more sustainable news platforms. And that is what's happening currently. For instance, some will tell you we're having conversations around looking at what sectors of information we need to boost on these platforms. Do we need to bring more education mandated platforms from a news perspective? How interactive can we make it? But more importantly, what are the sustainability threads that we need to look at so these become economically viable platforms? So that is the kinds of discussions that are having that are taking place around online. And I think the same is being looked at from a broadcast industry position as well. If you look at the print industry, and Kate mentioned that the huge devastation around legacy titles here, the conversation that's being had there is obviously you saw numbers in certain print editions being cut back, and then very creative and sustainable areas that they're looking at is obviously more online-driven publications of the legacy titles. But beyond that, I think the push is to say, how can advertisers come on board? So certainly from an economic position, media industry is having a lot more conversations with their stakeholders in the ad industry around matters of sustainability and how the ad industry will position their funding going forward. But I think the most important thing that we need to look at now, and certainly SANEF has addressed this in two ways. The first is, and I'm sure Kate will talk to you a lot more about the relief and emergency fund that we've put in place. The second aspect that we're looking at, and this is the more bigger long-term conversation, is you would recall that we had an engagement with the president. And the president has said to SANEF and invited SANEF to have a conversation with government on how we look at the sustainability of the media industry going forward. And that conversation is going to be had quite soon. And again, Kate will talk through to the mechanisms of what will be put in place, whether it's a task team, comprising SANEF members and other industry players that work together with government and other stakeholders to take this forward. That's something she will advise us on. But I think the most important aspect is, in going forward, we need to look at how do we capacitate journalists who have lost their jobs, and how do we capacitate future journalists that are coming into devastated industry about the road ahead. Because remember, universities have already taken in their intake for new upcoming journalists. And I think entrepreneurship is something that we need to look at quite closely, and how to turn journalists into entrepreneurs so that they too can be part of this digital future where media is increasingly finding its voice.
Kate, in answering, I guess, the same question, I'm interested to maybe get a sense of, in addition to what Mary has said, what type of conversations are being had with some of the digital players, because I've had time to also go through the State of the Newsroom report. And one of the things that it definitely highlights is that when it comes to advertising revenue, for example, a big chunk of it is now being taken by some of the digital players, particularly Facebook and Google, that have overtaken print, radio, and television in some aspects in terms of getting a piece of that that advertising pie, which is very crucial to the business model of the current media industry. So as SANEF, do you guys engage with some of those players? Are they even considered, because a lot of people get information from those platforms, are they considered media? Do they, fall part of the ambit of SANEF? Where does all of that fall?
Yes, so we absolutely have had conversations about Facebook and Google and the fact that these platforms, in fact, take a huge amount of advertising revenue away from the traditional media. And that is why, it is actually quite difficult for media to go online. So you'll get fantastic audiences, and yet you'll still struggle in terms of revenue because the majority of that is taken away. Now, the issue there, of course, is an international battle. It's not something that even South Africa as a country alone can fight. And for instance, Australia, places like France, etc., have been fighting that battle. And it's something that we have spoken about at our council meetings, that we've got to look at financing models. What is really interesting is to look at that some of our members, for instance, Daily Maverick. So what they've done is they've, realized that a lot of that funding is going elsewhere. And so what they've said, and the way that they survive and in fact are actually thriving is by having multiple streams of funding. So they get donor funding, they get a certain amount of advertising, people actually pay money to be members of Daily Maverick, and it means that you don't then have, paywalls. But of course, other people have gone a paywall direction, and then yet others, which I think is interesting, have gone a specific donor route. So you can look at some of the publications, such as online publications such as New Frame, also Ground Up. They are actually donor funded models. So I think the whole industry, exactly as Mary's been saying, have been struggling and coming up and debating vigorously. What do we do? What funding models do we adopt? And there are a number of funding models that we can adopt. But that we're still in a situation where I think there is a lot less funding. And I do think one of the big problem areas is Facebook and Google. And it is certainly something that we, when we talk to government and when we set up this task team, as Mary has spoken about, we will have to look at that and see, what is possible in terms of kind of international regulations and legislation around these massive platforms and the fact that they do need to be contributing to news.
I think now, Kate, just as a follow-up, we can actually now talk to what Mary alluded to earlier on, which is that SANEF Media Relief Fund. How is that actually working? What's the idea behind it? And how are you actually, how is it actually going to be working? What are the mechanisms?
Yes, so great. So the research that we were talking about that we did earlier this year, so in fact in June, we got a researcher, Ridge Rumney, to look at what was happening in the industry and the particular areas which had been badly hit. And it became very clear to us that one of the most devastating things was literally journalists losing their jobs, and also a number of freelancers that are very important to our industry losing their contracts, and getting to the point where literally people did not have food on the table. And so hence the relief fund was set up. And we were extremely lucky, and I'm very fortunate that MTN came forward with a 500,000 rand seed funding, and then quite quickly after that, First Rand came with a further 500,000 rand, and then after that, Open Society Foundation. So we've now got 1.5 million with also commitments. We just this morning, Alan Gray came to us and said that there's a commitment on their side as well to assist. So number of corporates coming forward. The idea with the fund is that for the first kind of few rounds, we will be giving funding to individual journalists. So what they have to do is to apply via the SANEF website, and they have to give us backing documents, evidence that they have lost their jobs or they've lost their contracts if they're freelancers. And we are giving 5,000 rand grants to journalists that can prove that, you know, they haven't got this income. And we will go through a number of rounds of that. And we have got a panel of media stalwarts that are making that, helping us decide, you know, who should actually get that 5,000 rand grant. And that includes Matata Sedu, Joe Chlorwe, and then from the freelancers organization, Safria, Melody Emmett, and then from the Association of Independent Publishers, Wandile Asana, who is the actual chairperson of the AIP. So they are all going to work together, look at all of those applications, and then make the decision. And maybe just to add, which is a very important part of the fund, the Social Justice Initiative, SJI, is playing a really important oversight role. They are checking that we are following processes of absolute transparency, absolute fairness. So when the funding is given out, you know, they are making sure that we are being absolutely principled around that. And then maybe, just the last thing to add in terms of the fund and the mechanisms of the fund is that if we get sufficient funding, we would then want to look at sustainability projects, for small independent media. For instance, some of the things around how to go online, helping, some of these community publications go online, in the most effective way possible. And then also zero rating of news websites. So again, it makes it easier, for citizens that don't have a lot of data, don't have a lot of money, to actually be able to browse, these sites for free. So those are some of the things that we're looking at long term.
Okay, cool. Mary, before we sort of come to the conclusion of this discussion, I just wanted to get your thoughts, I guess, especially because of this overarching theme that seems to have taken hold in this discussion around publications becoming digital, embracing the internet and the like. What do you make of South Africa's demographics? South Africa's income levels, because on the one hand you have, you've got legacy cost structures that have led to the shutdown of, some of these media houses. But at the same time, in terms of going digital, you have a population that might not necessarily, a significant portion, might not necessarily either be online or have the means to be online. So what's your take on that aspect of the online debate?
So I think the most pertinent question to ask ourselves is what aspect of the internet is available to the large masses of our country and its people? Certainly the cell phone, the mobile phone is something that we know is available in large sectors of the community. From that perspective, I think it's important, and Kate touched on this, zero rating is the important conversation we should have around news platforms, around news and information sites, so that access becomes easy. And I think this is more than just an economic issue. I think it is vitally a constitutionally mandated issue that media companies have to take on board and start having the conversation with the telcos at the moment to say, how can we zero rate all of these sites, these news sites that are deemed to be purely information? If you look at the precedent that universities have set, they've gone to the telecoms and their different stakeholders in industry, and they've made their sites zero rated. So I think from that perspective, it's an easy conversation to have. It's something that is doable so that we reach the masses. Because remember, as Kate mentioned earlier, the devastation of what's happened in the industry is going to impact rural South Africa at the most, the poorer communities, the LSMs that don't have access to the internet and who can't go online on computers and so and reach those kinds of online sites. But certainly from a cell phone, they can. And that's where that conversation has to take place. Beyond that, I think it's also important for us to understand that there needs to be constant awareness around what's happening in the media space. And that's where media companies need to be a lot more creative as well.
A follow-up to you, Mary. What are you actually excited about in terms of your outlook for the media industry going forward? There's a lot of doom and gloom. There's a lot of negativity, you know, whether it's around the decade that you've highlighted or the current crisis. There's been a lot of negativity around the media industry and its business and the like. But what are you actually excited about for the future?
So not to take away from the heart-wrenching devastation, and I mentor a lot of journalists who have gone through this phase of suddenly finding themselves without a job, not to take away from that and the human tragedy we're experiencing. I think there is an opportune moment. We're sitting on the cusp of realizing what the future of media should be like. And for once, I think all role players in the current media space have an opportunity to take head on this challenge of technology, the advances around technology and the streaming challenges that we spoke about before, and making sure that online becomes a reality, but that it's not just a reality we take on because it is a good business imperative, but rather it is a reality we take on from a democratic dispensation, from a South African perspective, to say we committed to media freedom, we committed to the free flow of information, but we're also committed to balancing our commercial imperatives with that of the spread of information, infotainment, entertainment, and all of the things that make for an exciting and wonderful media space. Around content, that is.
Kate, your outlook and what are you excited about?
So, of course, I'm excited about a lot of things. And I think that, you know, if we look at some of the reporting that's happening in South Africa, you know, there have been absolutely massive surges of audiences. Now, of course, this is more middle class audiences. But if you look at it online, I mean, it's incredible. If you look at, you know, Media 24, those ones, you know, Daily Maverick, you know, a whole lot of the smaller online sites as well. Ground Up, etc. Fantastic. So I think, you know, that's really important. But I also think that we've seen some amazing specialist reporting. So if you look at Bekisiza, if you look at, you know, Health E News, you know, some of this really, really amazing reporting that's been happening around COVID. And, you know, and around particularly health issues. So I think some of these, you know, new kind of units and new publications that have come online really have been extremely exciting. And then also I think if you look at something like MediaHack, which is, you know, actually looking at all the data and putting together these amazing kind of, visual representations of the data and comparisons between us and the world and, you know, day-to-day comparisons as to like what's happening with the pandemic. I mean, that is very exciting. And some of the relationships which I have seen are happening between different media houses are also very exciting. So if you look at just again as an example, MediaHack working with Becker Caesar also working then with Newsroom Africa, you know, and that's just one example. There are many, many examples of our media houses working together. And of course, if you looked at the Gupta leaks, that was one of the most amazing, you know, stories. And we had, you know, News 24, Scorpio, Amabungani, all of them working together and then literally, you know, bringing out a news story that took down a president. So I think, you know, those are the kinds of things that are happening, and those are the things that we need to be looking to the future. And I think really great storytelling on whatever platform it is, and information that's really necessary and important for audiences, all of that is amazing and something that we should look to for the future.
If I can just add on that, I mean, what our experience has shown is that the scoop mentality has almost disappeared from the media space. So absolutely imperative is collaboration. And collaboration can only come when people start breaking down those brick walls and looking to talking to each other. And I think from the bigger media space, the mainstream media space, those conversations between the print industry and the broadcast industry must take place. And obviously, I think what Kate's pointing to around content, if you see how creative journalists have become, and we saw this with the public broadcaster as well, the stories have just been amazing. The voices we're hearing are so new and so different. And I think that's a big win for what the pandemic has forced us to look at. It's a reality we have to live with, and that is we're all in this together. No one is spared.
So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Thank you so much to our guests from the South African National Editors Forum. We had Mary Papaya, who is a founding editor of SANEF, and she was just highlighting the fact that, you know, over all the years, there have been lots of moments that the media industry has had to cover and tell stories about, but COVID-19 is an unprecedented moment that the country is going through and that the industry is having to grapple with, and just highlighting the fact that a lot of the structural changes that have been set in motion over the last decade or so have been further exacerbated by what's going on with the current crisis. And we also had an opportunity to talk to Kate Skinner, who is the executive director at SANEF, just highlighting the fact that, you know, this is been a good time in terms of people looking for information and, you know, perhaps cementing in the minds of people the place of good journalism, increasing audiences, and just increasing engagement around, you know, online content. But the bigger discussion is how to make sure that online content is sustainable for media houses, yet being accessible for the populace. At the same time, just talking about their media relief fund, which is just there to help a lot of journalists who have been unfortunately retrenched in the last couple of months, given the current crisis.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Quite a fascinating discussion with Kate and Mary, and just around the state of newsrooms, the state of media in South Africa. And for me personally, I think this is quite a crucial time for the media industry. I've said this a couple of times. I think the other week I was talking about the fact that the economics fraternity is going to have to find new ways to actually measure, you know, economic performance and perhaps this is a moment through which they're going to come up with new ways of actually gauging economic data and economic performance instead of the traditional, you know, quarterly reports that look back and stuff like that, something that's more real time, that's quicker, that's faster. And I think the same thing can be said about the media industry. This is a moment that's going to force the media industry to make some of the structural changes and actually figure out how to monetize what is a crucial service in the country. It's quite tough when you hear that at one point there were 10,000 journalists or media practitioners, and now that number's down to 5,000 officially, but with the current slate of retrenchments, that number is going to be, you know, it's going to come down quite significantly. So all of these things to consider. But more than anything else, just looking at some international media houses, it's interesting to see how certain large media houses have been able to monetize their digital properties. If one looks at the Financial Times in the UK, they've been able to gain over a million online subscribers, which has been quite good for their business. So they've used that subscription model. Whereas if you look at one of the biggest players in the news industry, that's Bloomberg, they have quite an interesting business model because they've got multiple streams that they use. But a big part of their business is because they have over 300,000 customers around the world that use the Bloomberg Professional Service, which is a $2,000 a month service that is given to newsrooms and more than anything else to the investment community. And they've got more than 300,000, you know, customers paying those amounts every single month. And if one can actually relate, $2,000 a month is roughly 25 to about 30,000 rand a month that they're getting from 300,000 customers around the world. That is a huge amount of money. And it's, you know, things like that where you have a product or an innovation that can help you to actually fund the rest of your organization. It's, you know, some of the models that people can actually use to actually help the newsrooms out there. So we just hope that organizations like SANEF and the newsrooms and media owners in the country are working on this issue and are going to come up with something that's actually sustainable and that actually seeks to balance out. And I think that's one of the dangers, you know, when you actually think about it, because one of the things I was highlighted by Mary during the conversation is the fact that you, in taking advantage of this digital revolution, there needs to be a balance where we have the zero rating discussion. But my question then becomes, if you zero rate the access on the consumer side to new services, then what is the incentive for the people that have to then pay for that access? That's the first one. The second one is, how do you police to whom zero-rated news content goes to? And the third question is just, if a certain service is zero-rated, then how is that service going to make money for the actual organization? A lot of the time, some of these services, it's government services, because I can think of, you know, online education, for example. If you are a company, let's say a bank, and you have an online education initiative and you zero rate that service, chances are that money is coming out of a CSI budget and that initiative is not meant to make money anyway. So zero rating, it makes sense. But if that that platform is actually meant to be self-sustaining and have people that are employed and the like, the zero rating model, how does that end up with revenue actually going to the organization? And I think these are some of the questions that need to be asked when trying to strike this balance between promoting access for news and information to the public, but at the same time trying to create sustainable business models for newsrooms going forward. So that's been it in terms of this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.